This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and I have with us tonight Dr. Gail Green, and we're going to talk about her book, Insomniac, and her experience with insomnia. How are you, Dr. Green?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Sure.
So why don't you give us a little bit of background about you before we get started, where people can find your book, you know, where they can read a little bit more about you. They can email you if they have some questions they want to ask you.
It's I have a website blog. It's called Sleep Starved, sleepstarved.org. And there's a lot about me. There's a lot about the book on there, and there's responses from lots of insomniacs who've written in about how they deal with their problem. And the book is, you know, I guess Amazon is the easiest place to get it. But
your name for them. Is it?
Yeah, Gail, G-A-Y-L-E, and then Green, G-R-E-E-N-E. And the website is sleepstarved.org. And my own, I mean, I've lived with this problem all my life, and I've got kind of tired of hearing the same old advice ever since I was 10 years old, you know. Go to sleep earlier, you know, avoid caffeine. Well, they didn't say caffeine when I was 10, but, you know, now what you hear is avoid caffeine, avoid alcohol, keep a regular schedule, observe good sleep hygiene, don't use the bed for anything but sleep and sex, you know. All this, you know, good advice, but it's so useless in a way. I mean, it's not entirely useless because, you know, you really do have to avoid caffeine and alcohol. But if you've got a chronic sleep problem, it's really not going to address it. So I set out to find out where the research was, what the science knew about the disorder, and also what insomniacs knew, because I think people who live with conditions actually have a whole lot of information about those conditions, inside information, as it were, because we live in our bodies.
Certainly. You know. Well, before we get, I do want to say this. Typically, I have people on my show that come here with a resolve, you know, mm-hmm. tell people what to do about it. But in your case, the reason I decided to have you was to give people someone to identify with. Mm-hmm. If they've gotten that they're crazy or whatever, you know, that it really does exist, it really is a significant problem, and that there's somebody else that has written down their story in just somebody else's words. Mm-hmm. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does.
You know, like when you first have depression and you read another person's book and you haven't studied much about it, yes, I understand what they're saying. I'm glad somebody else has that problem.
And I've got a lot of reader mail that, you know, from insomniacs who've said just that, you know, finally somebody told my story, and I feel, and it's very important that we not feel crazy. I mean, this is a neurochemical deficiency. It's, you know, like, you know, a diabetic lacks insulin. I mean, there is something that we don't have that other people have. I mean, in some cases, of course, you know, it can be because, you know, we're too high-strung or neurotic or whatever. I mean, I'm not, you know, the thing about insomnia is it's many things. It's not just one thing. So whenever you say insomnia is, you know, you have to really qualify that. Some insomnia, I'm sure, is caused by people who are, you know, what they call sort of psychoneurotic or, you know, other, you know, but there's a whole range.
I guess some is induced by the person themselves, by what they do and the life they live.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
I said I would guess some people induce it themselves by the lives
they live. Yeah, there are things you can do to bring it on and certainly to make it worse and to keep it going. And a lot of people in our crazy, you know, 24/7 society do that. But there are other people who follow every rule in the book. They live laid-back lives. They've got good attitudes. They still can't sleep, you know, because there's something about the sleep system that just isn't working very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, a sleep system is like a biological system. All animals do it. And it's like a cardiovascular system, a digestive system, a musculoskeletal. I mean, people are born with different endowments, and some people are born with sleep systems that are fragile, you know, from the beginning. Someday, science will be able to tell us, you know, why, and hopefully address it.
So how did you function in your early life? How did you go to school? How did you get a degree? How did you have a life? With the problem as significant, because from what I mean, talking to you earlier, I know you haven't resolved this problem. So how did you have a life?
Yeah, well, I gravitated right away towards something where I wouldn't have to march to the world's time, you know, graduate school, where you can kind of structure your own hours and do your work late if you want to, not have to get up to an alarm, which all it does is destroy my sleep, you know, knowing that alarm's going to go off. I just don't sleep. And so, you know, I got a certain amount of graduate training, and then I got into academia, luckily, where as a professor I can also structure my time. I would say that's the first bit of advice I have for any insomniac is to try to get a life where you can structure your time. It's not always possible. I mean, it just isn't, because the world gets up very early. Your children get up very early. I did not have children, and it was largely because I really knew that I was just not, you know, capable of dealing with, you know, the world's time like that. So I got a job where I could structure my own hours. I tried a series of different, you know, medications. Some of them were quite bad and got me quite, you know, addicted. And I talk about all that in the book. I think it's important.
I'd like for you to talk about that tonight. I'd like for you to talk about the path that you followed and what you found.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's an awful lot of denial. You know, you just sort of pretend it's not a problem. And, you know, I'll get hold of it, or it'll be better tomorrow or something. And then you kind of like look at it and say, this is a problem. I don't sleep more than 2, 3, 4 hours a night, you know. So a doctor offered me a benzodiazepine, and this was the early 80s when the enthusiasm about this drug was still high, and I took it, and I loved it for a number of months, and then I realized I couldn't stop it. And that continued for a number of years, and coming off it, which I did about twice a year just to sort of get it out of my system, was really brutal. It was just a thing I would hope that other people would not have to go through. There were many years in this process, but currently there is, you know, a drug that's much shorter acting than these drugs, so I can partly sleep a few of my own hours and then partly cobble together another few hours by nibbling off just a piece of a short acting drug. The drugs have gotten better, I'm happy to say. They're not so addictive, they're not so heavy. So if you can sort of manage them and play around and experiment, you might be able to find something that actually works. I hate to go the drug route. I would say to anybody, do it as a last resort, not a first resort. Do it after you've tried everything else, and then be very careful, you know, keeping the dose low, trying not to take it every night, trying to get some of your own sleep, because they're all tricky. All the drugs are tricky, even the newer ones that are less problematic.
Did you have your brain tested?
No.
Firing mechanism, firing things going on?
I really tried to sort of interest people, you know, as I was doing the book and interviewing a lot of sleep researchers, you know. I wish that somebody had just taken me into their lab and done a complete hormonal workup and, you know, a really detailed EEG, which nobody ever did, but nobody did, you know, and I think it's actually indicative of they're in some ways not terribly interested in the individual insomniac. You know, they have their studies going where they have, you know, the data that they're looking for, the questions that they're looking for, but when an actual insomniac sort of comes along and says, you know, I could actually talk to you about this. I've been through it, and maybe I would really like to know about my hormones. Could we do some hormonal assays? You know, I'd like to know about my cortisol levels.
So have you tested those?
Well, I did finally get a cortisol test, and it was interesting. It wasn't as high as I thought it would be. And it was skewed, you know, it's supposed to be highest at 6 in the morning. Mine was highest at 9 in the morning. I have such a late clock. My clock is so much later than, well, 3 hours later than everybody else's. So that was illuminating. But I never did try to get neurotransmitters tested or anything like that. In fact, I didn't know about that when I wrote the book.
Did you find that when you did approach someone that was doing a sleep study that they were pretty much prompted by pharmaceutical companies?
No, the sleep study was just kind of pro forma. It was very... They didn't seem to care a lot, you know. I mean, they got me in at hours I don't sleep. They wanted to be there between 10 at night and 6 in the morning. I mean, I don't, you know, I get to sleep at 3. And
right.
So I got 3 hours of sleep under their study from 3 to 6, but that didn't seem to faze them. It took forever to do the paperwork. I didn't even get a consultation with a doctor until I pressed and pressed and pressed. It was just... really very kind of ludicrous in a way. I mean, the statement was nobody cares, you know, about whether you're sleeping or not. I had a very good doctor at my HMO who pressed for the study and then pressed for me to get an interview with a person. But, sleep is just a basic function.
Absolutely. I don't see how you're not stark raving mad.
Well, I have chemical help. I mean, I'm usually able to sleep 2, 3, or 4 hours of my own, and then I get another 2, 3, or 4 hours with, you know, an Ambien, you know.
Are you able to get REM sleep?
You know, I think I'm REM starved with this system, because you get REM in the later part of the night, and that's when I take the pill. And because when I don't take a pill, I find a lot of REM rebound. You know, I dream like crazy, and I really don't like that about this system. On the other hand, I do manage to get 6 or 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night, which I do like very much. You know.
I can just imagine. I've been that way before when I was pregnant, and I thought I was going to die. I went into a horrible depression. Did you have to deal with that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, you really do. You just go into a complete tailspin, and then the doctor tells you, "Oh well, you can't sleep because you're depressed." And I go, "Wait a minute, I'm depressed because I can't sleep." You don't understand.
What about your hormones?
I have stayed on HRT, hormone replacement therapy.
Are you staying on natural therapy or
bioidentical? Yes, I mean, they're bioidentical.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a pretty enlightened gynecologist to take me through that. But
did he do all the tests?
Well, such as the HMO gives you, what happened to me was when I entered menopause, I just went into month-long PMS, and during PMS I never could sleep, and so my form of sort of menopause was insomnia, and I thought, this can't last. I have to do something about this. So I went on to HRT, and then every time I've tried to stop it, I have gone into this, you know, terrible insomnia again, so I've stayed on it. And again, you know, you just have to do risk-benefit calculations in your life, you know, what is more important, quality of life now, or, you know, I mean, because obviously there is a risk with these progesterone and estrogen supplements, which I don't like. It's, you know.
Do you take estrogen supplements?
Well, yeah, Estrace.
Mm, okay.
Do you
find that you have more illness in your body?
I'm knock wood. I'm pretty lucky that way. But my immune system is on the hyper alert, so I tend to have a sort of autoimmune reactions to things. I have a thyroid condition called Hashimoto's, which blitzed my thyroid. Thyroid conditions are very, very often associated with sleep problems. Too much thyroid keeps you from sleeping. Too little thyroid keeps you from sleeping. And so it's really important to have your thyroid tested and make sure that that you're supplementing it. So I'm taking thyroid supplements. And then I tend to get sort of rashes and sort of slight tendency to arthritis, you know, all these kind of autoimmune things. But I think it means that my immune system is on the alert And, you know, that has a disadvantage because it can attack it, me.
Do you do something to keep your immune system boosted?
Well, vitamin C and, you know, lots of fruit and vegetables and stuff like that, but not anything else. Did you have?
Do you do a organic diet?
Yeah, I certainly do. I've eaten organic for years.
Really important.
Once you get used to it, you just can't even eat the other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not even health. It's just a matter of taste. You know. But going back to your question about, you know, many of the insomniacs I interviewed for this book, and I interviewed dozens, do have constant problems with health. You know, bugs move in, flus move in at every, you know, conceivable juncture, and you know, so it's clearly immune compromising. I mean, lack of sleep, and there are now studies that show this, that actually show the immune system is compromised when you deprive a subject of sleep. You know, if you're sleep deprived and go and get a an influenza shot or something like that, it will not take as well, a flu shot, something like that. You won't get as many antibodies toward it. Your antibodies are not as energetic if you've been sleep deprived. I just think that's an incredible finding, you know.
What about heavy metals? Do you have fillings in your teeth?
I do, yeah.
Did you ever think about doing something about that?
My teeth are so precarious. I just am so afraid of, you know, fiddling with them. No, I really haven't. Although some of the people who wrote in said, you know, I certainly heard this kind of report from people who had had some success with that. I just think we have to try everything there is out there. You know, read widely, research everything, talk to other people, get on the web, and then try these things, you know.
What alternative or what mechanism did you find that helped you the most?
Well, it's actually getting hold of my time, which isn't, you know, which is a larger problem, of course, for people. But I find that when I have control of my time and don't feel too crowded, you know, don't feel the days and the hours crowding in on me, I have the best chance of getting some sleep of my own. And then good old Western, you know, chemicals. I'm trying to think of any alternative.
Did you do bowel feedback?
Yeah, I tried that. You know, but it works for other people. I mean, just because it hasn't, you know, I didn't have a good... In fact, I had a student the other day who came up to me and said, and asked me, have you tried biofeedback? And I sort of said, well, kind of, because I tried it a long time ago, and I don't know about the, you know, it depends a lot on the practitioner you get.
Mm-hmm.
She said, because my daughter has just been helped so much by it, and her daughter apparently had sleep problems from the, you know, time she was born, and she said, and I just wanted to tell you about it. So you hear things like this, you know, that some people are helped by, you know, we're all so different, we're all so individual that there's no one-size-fits-all, you know.
What about minerals such as magnesium and taurine and things like that?
I tried a magnesium drink that a friend of mine swore by, and all it did was give me indigestion.
Yeah. Well, you know, oral magnesium doesn't really absorb very well.
Uh-huh.
And usually the types of magnesium that they put in regular supplements that you get at the pharmacy, at the drugstore, or these drinks that they put in, they don't absorb very much because they don't absorb until they get to the bottom of the colon, and by the time they get to the bottom of the colon, they get pushed out in feces.
Huh.
So Norm Shealy's developed something called a magnesium lotion, and it's made with magnesium chloride, so it's a transdermal lotion, and about 99% of it's absorbed. So you get a lot more benefit, and he says 70-80% of the population in the world is magnesium deficient to begin
mm-hmm.
with,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
the soil is so depleted so the plants aren't getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something that you ought to try.
Yeah, what is it, magnesium?
You go to normshealy.com.
Okay, how do you spell Shealy? S-H-E-E?
N-O-R-M-S-H-E-A-L-Y.
Okay, I'll find it then.
And that, and well, it helps conduct the electricity a lot smoother. mm-hmm. you know, so you don't have mm-hmm. erratic firing. But it also calms the body
mm-hmm.
and helps induce sleep, as well as serotonin and dopamine can't form without
yeah.
magnesium being
yeah.
there to
yeah.
begin with.
I know it's very crucial, and I've heard some people swear just by, you know, their calcium magnesium supplements they take at night. I always take those at night, and they don't, they just don't do a
That's
thing.
That's because it's not very absorbable. Most people waste their money buying over the counter. I'm buying, you know, supplements like at the drugstore because
mm-hmm.
it's usually magnesium oxide or carbonate or something, and all it
mm-hmm.
does is give people diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
you know, or tear up their stomach or give them gas or something.
Well, I like the idea of the lotion. I mean, that might...
Yeah, you just put like a tablespoon on
mm-hmm.
two or three times a day, and it stops palpitations if you have those. It's really amazing.
Interesting, yeah.
It's really
yeah.
amazing. So tell me what... I guess, how did you figure out how to go on with your life?
Well, I always had, you know, something I wanted to do with it. I mean, I always wanted to teach and write, and, you know, I always had these interests. And so it was just a question of kind of like living around it, you know. You just kind of don't schedule anything in the morning, you know. Don't overload. I mean, I do overload myself sometimes, and I wish I could stop that. It doesn't seem to be in me. I mean, I guess it comes with the territory of being interested and wanting to do a lot of stuff. But I was just very lucky. You know, I led a kind of, I mean, I was not, you know, wedded to any structures. And that helped an enormous amount. Now, if you actually are a mother of children, you have to get up and get to work, it's so much harder, you know. It's just, I mean, and those are the people, my heart just bled for them. I mean, I would get letters, I would, you know, talk to people, and they were just so tired, you know. And the only thing I could really say to them was, sleep when you can, you know. The kids are gone. Lie down for 10 minutes, for 20 minutes, you know. Don't be embarrassed to nap in the middle of the day. I mean, Winston Churchill did it, you know. It's an honorable tradition, you know. They're
yeah.
very smart, energetic people do it. Just, you know, try to nurture. I mean, just try to allow your body some sleep, even if it's irregular hours, even if it's, you know, just whatever you can to kind of, and if you need medication, you know, do that for a while. You can get off it. I mean, I did, you know. But it's just so important. It's just like the fuel of life. You deprive yourself of sleep, and you deprive yourself of sanity as
yeah.
well as energy. You know?
Do you have trouble going to sleep, staying to sleep, or both?
Yeah, I usually can go to sleep pretty easily. I stay up very late, and I tire myself out. That's a good rule of thumb. You know, don't go to sleep. Don't try to go to sleep before you're really sleepy. You know, and if that does mean keeping later hours, then so be it, you know. But then I'm awake 2, 3, 4 hours later. I'm just awake, you know. And unless I am totally, you know, on the far side of the moon someplace, you know. I mean, my partner has this house up in Mendocino, up in on the ocean, on the coast north of San Francisco. And occasionally when I'm there for several days, you know, I can not take a pill the second part of the night, but I have to be there, and I have to have nothing going on in my life. And so everybody says, well, why don't you retire and move to Mendocino? Well, the truth is, I don't want nothing going on in my life. You know, it's this bind. I actually like to work. I actually like to be out in the world and, you know, like be having this interview and stuff like that. But that seems to generate enough, you know, anxiety that I just don't. You know, I can't sleep. I don't want to just sever all my ties with the world.
Speaking of partners, how did your partner deal with this, and how can a partner help someone that has insomnia?
That's another really important thing for somebody with a chronic sleep problem, to find somebody understanding. I went through about 3 people who were not understanding. They were just really bad about it. One guy who truly made me feel crazy, you know, he said, well, you ought to get hold of this. You can't get hold of it. It's a matter of willpower. You know, you're doing this deliberately. It always floundered on sleeping together, because I would try, and then I would end up moving out to another room. And men don't like that, you know, and I understand why, but it was, anyway, so I finally found the right one, and he's been just wonderful. I mean, he values his own sleep because he works with computer programming. He really has to have his brain. And so he's very understanding about my, well, we started out sleeping in the same bed, and that was wonderful, but then he developed a snore.
Oh,
and then I had to just leave at that point. I mean, go into another room, and it was really sad because I was enjoying, you know. This. Also, his sleep got more fragile, and so my bouncing around at night kind of bothered him. So it was kind of partly self-preservation. He was very good about saying, you know, that's, I understand, we'll sleep apart. It's really important to find somebody who understands this as a serious problem and not a matter of willpower or craziness or deliberate willfulness, you know. I don't know. People have to understand more about sleep problems. There's not a lot of tolerance or understanding in the world about these issues.
Well, when you do try a mechanism to help you, how long do you try it before you give up?
Well, it kind of depends. I mean, I think I used to have more stick-to-itiveness. I did acupuncture for quite a few years and tried different practitioners. And I'll say my headaches went away with acupuncture. I did not, I wasn't going for headaches. I was going for sleep. But it didn't touch my sleep. Now, I keep meaning to go back and try it again because I think at different stages of life, different things might work for a person. So that was a pretty long run. Meditation, transcendental meditation, I love transcendental meditation. It doesn't help my sleep, but it helps me recharge so that I can get through a day that I haven't had sleep. You know, it's where you just sort of think a mantra and your
right.
thoughts slow down and your breathing slows down. It's a wonderful technique, very effective. But for me, I go into this deep relaxation for 20 minutes and then I'm up and out and energized. And I used to try to do that for sleep and I'd be up the rest of the night, you know, so that clearly wasn't a good sleep thing for me, but it was, and I'm sure it was good for my health. It was really good for that relaxation, and it was certainly good for getting through the evening if I hadn't had much sleep the night before. Yeah, I would really suggest that people try out meditation techniques. There's something there. And, you know, I've been meaning to try out other meditation techniques. I mean, transcendental meditation is just one of many. I highly recommend them. I mean, I know they're effective.
Well, there's a lot of information, I mean, a lot of research going out with transcendental meditation right now.
Is there?
And sleep, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a man named David Orm Johnson that's doing a lot.
So
if you're interested, you might could talk to him.
Yeah. Well, I had this, I met this guy who was about my age and this was just recently, and so we were both in our 60s, and he had been doing it all his life very regularly, and the way they say you're supposed to do it, twice a day. And this guy looked so young. I mean, he looked 40 or something, and I thought, wow, maybe there really is something to that technique.
I can tell you there is.
Yeah.
Well, if there were things out there that someone listening knew that could help you, or possibly help you, do you want to know?
Do I want to know what you mean? Like, I don't understand the question. What do you mean?
If someone listening.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yes. Please leave a thing on sleepstarve.org. I mean, there's a way you can respond there.
Uh-huh.
I think it's straightforward. Some people have said they've had trouble getting in and leaving comments, but. I would love to hear. I mean, that's what that site is for, is to call information from people who are, you know, have this problem. Because people do know things. I mean, they, you know, they've experimented. I had a wonderful thing happen. I mean, I read this formula, this vitamin cocktail that a man in the late stages of fatal familial insomnia, which is a terrible disease where you actually stop sleeping entirely, It's very rare, so don't worry. But this man made this cocktail, very strong cocktail, many different vitamins and herbs and I don't know what all, you know, it kind of took a half a page. One of my readers tried it. He said, it's changed my life. I'm sleeping. I didn't try it. It just seemed too complicated and too, I am going to this summer when I have some, you know, clear time. I'm going to sit down and, because you just have to go and buy all the different ingredients. It's in the book. And
well, it seems to me if a problem, I don't mean to be rude here, but it seems to be if the problem's that bad, you just make the time. Make it happen to save your life.
Yeah, you got to kind of...
You know, it's like having cancer. Well, I'll make time for it next summer when I get off and if I'm not dead from the metastases yet.
No, it's not quite like that, because I do obviously have ways of limping along with it. I mean,
it's such a miserable way to live.
Well, yeah.
How do you literally get energy? I know you said you meditated, but I know if I don't sleep, back during my pregnancy when I had that problem,
mm-hmm.
nobody could stand to be around me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I couldn't even lift my arms and my feet to go forward. How do you do that?
Well, I do sleep is the thing. I mean, I sleep a few hours of my own, and then I take an Ambien, and I sleep the rest, you know, I keep it under 5 milligrams or 5 milligrams.
Uh-huh.
So I just have gone the route of kind of Western medicine, which, you know, I'm not crazy about, but it is a way of functioning and of kind of getting through.
I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah, it's not, you know, and I think I am REM deprived, and who knows what else that goes along with this, you know, medication. You know,
do you get another thing I got was like anxious and shaky, literally when I didn't get enough sleep. Do you have that?
Yeah, when I don't sleep, I'm a basket case. I mean, pretty much anybody is, I think. But I don't let that happen in my life. You know, I don't do it anymore. I did for many years. I would have many days on 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours of sleep. Five, I don't even do well on 5. Some people do. You know, there's a difference between a short sleeper and an insomniac. A genuine short sleeper just doesn't need more than 5 or 4 or 3. I've talked to people, you know, who really don't need very much sleep. I need about 7 hours, which is a normal sleep need. So the years that I spent, you know, going through on, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, I was younger. I had a lot of energy in those
uh-huh.
days. Everything was new. You know, I had a new job in Manhattan, you know, in Midtown Manhattan, you know, that kind of thing. There was all that kind of excitement of youth. And the older I got, the more I just thought, I can't do this anymore. You know, I need, and also the kind of work I do, which is writing, I need all cylinders firing, you know, I just can't do those short sleep days anymore. So that's when I kind of gravitated toward medication. I wish I could say it was meditation that it, you know.
Right.
But it's actually simply a short acting.
Do you get, like, restless leg or palpitations?
No, I'm unfortunate. I have not had that. That's a real curse. Although they do have drugs, I think, that address that a little bit. Yeah, there's quite a few people who have it. It comes on in pregnancy sometimes.
Well, it's magnesium deficient.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I talk to a lot of people, you know, through this radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, if I talk to a person who has restless leg and they take magnesium and or potassium, depending on the deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And the tests, there are no tests the doctors can really do for magnesium because it doesn't matter what's in your bloodstream, it matters what's on the cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctors never say anything about it to people.
Mm-hmm.
So they just don't know. So if they go and do this magnesium thing like Norm's doing or take potassium, whichever one they're low in, it just goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, so I'm glad you don't have that. What about palpitations?
No, I don't really have that. I mean, yeah, no, can't say that. On the whole, my body, this friend of mine said, you have great body calm. I mean, I don't have a lot of sort of somatic anxiety anyway. That's not where the problem is. There was a very interesting study that was done just a few months ago where they have actually, a researcher at Harvard named Winkelmann has actually found a deficiency of GABA in primary insomniacs' brains, which is just, I mean, that's the way it's going to go. I mean, they're going to find something that simple, which if they can then address will be, you know, like an insulin shot to a diabetic.
Right. Do you exercise? Does that help?
Well, it does. I think it does. Not in a simple one-to-one way, you know, like where you, I swim, and I swim it whenever I possibly can. And I try to swim about a mile, although that, I'm such a slow swimmer, it takes me almost an hour to do that. But, you know, and I do find that those nights I can sleep, I usually get past the 2 hours, I get up to 4 hours, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it does help. And studies have shown that, you know, it does increase the deep sleep if you can get a good workout in the course of the day. So I try to do something like, or I walk 2 miles, you know, up a hill. I live where the hills, just where the hills sort of start in Northern California, and I just charge up the hill at night. But that, you know, I mean, they say, oh, you shouldn't exercise at night. I exercise quite late, and it doesn't, that doesn't seem to, you know, be a problem. Actually, I sort of like the process to kind of decompress, you know, you kind of mull things over as you're exercising, and then you don't have to take them to bed with you. The worst thing you can do is take that stuff
right
to bed. You know, you have to make a barrier between the day and the bed. And whatever way you can do that, you know, some people write in journals, some people make a worry list. There's just, I couldn't do that, because if I made a worry list, I would then, you know, it would conjure all that stuff.
Right,
I don't want
right
to do that. I actually like watching a DVD. They say you're not supposed to do that, but I actually find it really relaxing because it exercises a part of my mind that I haven't exercised all day. You know, I do reading and writing. I'm always dealing with words, so I put in a DVD and I see, there's visuals, you know, color visuals, and that to me is really a nice de-stressing kind of exercise.
I would think so, too. It helps me to do that.
Do you like that? Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I really do. Have you tried HemiSync CDs, by the way?
I listen to books on tape, but I haven't. Now, what kind of CDs are you talking about?
It's called HemiSync. It's something that the Monroe Institute developed years ago. And
so
Elmer Green, who happens to be the father of biofeedback, he had something to do with this stuff, too, I think. I'm not sure.
To spell it.
But it's H-E-M-I dash S-Y-N-Sync, and it's some kind of, doesn't even matter if you listen to the music, you can turn it down, but it's got some kind of frequencies embedded into whatever CD that it is, and it does something to the way the brain fires. You can look up the Monroe Institute.
Okay, where is that?
I think it's in Virginia.
Huh.
I think. But it's not hard to find. Just Google Monroe Institute.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you something, a couple of other things that I wanted to tell you about. I don't know if you know Gottfried Kellerman. He's at Neurosciences, Inc. They have two sites, Neurosciences, Inc. and NeuroRelief.com. And what he does is neurotransmitter testing. And I asked him about you. I said, I have this woman that's coming on my show, and she's an incessant insomniac. Do you think you can help her? And he said, absolutely. And
all
he
right
might have talked about it on the last interview I did with him. I've interviewed him twice.
Uh-huh.
So you could go to that second interview on my archive page. I think it was in that one, I think, where I asked him if he could help you. And he said yes. And there's another guy named Burton Goldberg. Do you know Burton?
Nope.
Well, it's burtongoldberg.com. And Burton, he's just an amazing, he's the one that started that alternative medicine magazine. He's got connections.
Oh,
everywhere.
Yeah, and he wrote a book, didn't he?
He's got about 100 books.
Yeah, yeah, I've got one of his books.
And he, I asked him if he thought he could help you, and he said yes. But there's just some things I've, you know, about supplements and amino acids that I think you ought to look at anyway, or people that have that problem should look at. And it's not going to be in your conventional medicine. It's going to be on those people that are way out on the edge. And I can help you if you're interested to find those people.
Well, I am. Yeah, this vitamin cocktail that this guy was taking with fatal familial insomnia had a bunch of amino acids in it. I know that was.
They're important, and nobody talks about those any time, you know.
Yeah.
They don't ever talk about that or minerals, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They talk about vitamins, but if they forget minerals and amino acids. So that might give you some place. Again, if you're interested, you can just email me or call me, and I'll do it. I'm not going to bother you with it if you don't want it, though.
Yeah, I am interested. Yeah, I would like to follow up on that.
Now, at least you get. Oh, and another person that does very vast hormone testing. His name is Dr. Jay Mead. He took John Lee's place when John Lee died at their clinic, and he has a lab called Labrix, I think, L-A-B-R-I-X, and he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I had him on my show last weekend, and he's amazing.
What's his last name?
He knows stuff about hormones that nobody else knows.
Huh, Jay what?
Mead, M-E-A-D. You can email me and ask me whatever you want to know, and I'll give you their contact information.
Okay, okay, yeah.
Because it, you know, it could be a door opening for you.
So, there
was something I was going to ask you. Does your brain chatter when you go to sleep?
Sometimes, but not always. That's a huge problem with many insomniacs, is this sort of racing mind, you know, you just take everything to bed. If I haven't made a sufficient barrier between myself and the day, that'll happen, you know, where I'm still teaching the class, I'm still having the conversations,
writing
the emails, all of that junk. I do find that listening to a book on tape is a good thing. Because, you know, you get your mind off your own story onto somebody else's story. It's got to be the right kind of book,
right.
Of course. You don't want a cliffhanger or a page-turner. You just want something that's soothing and, you know, not particularly plot-driven. Also, visualization techniques sometimes help me a little bit. I have this one that I describe in the book where I describe this little man in painter's overalls, and he comes out with a bill, you know, in front of a billboard, and he paints very slowly the number 100, you know, and I make myself sort of follow the brush strokes, and then he turns the page.
That's a very good idea.
99, you know, and it's a little more complex than counting sheep, which never did me look good, but it, you know, it makes you just kind of, if you can visualize, and if you've got any technique for visualization, develop it. I think it's a really powerful technique against insomnia, because visuals are related to sleep, you know, the dreams, and also, you know, hypnagogia, those kind of images you get on the inside of the eyelids before you go to sleep sometimes.
Yeah.
Those are all, you know, visuals are somehow a relaxation thing that lead to sleep, whereas words kind of keep us imprisoned in our conscious babbling minds. Words are the enemies of sleep, and visuals are the friends of sleep. I really believe that.
I didn't know there was a name for those patterns.
Hypnagogia. Yeah, they're fascinating. Poets are intrigued by those, I think, more than medical people are. There's not a whole lot of scientific research on hypnagogia. I mean, there's some, but it's really the poets who are sort of captivated by those images, and they're so different in different people. Like my partner and I have completely different visuals before we go. I don't have them very often. I wish I had them every night, but I have them, you know, once or twice a month or something.
Have you ever tried, I just thought of something, HeartMath instruments that they have made?
Heart, what is it?
HeartMath Research Institute.
No.
They've made these, this kind of machine to help you get in an altered state of mind so that you can relax and do whatever it is that your goal is. I don't think they're very expensive. I think like $200.
How do they work? Is it a sound thing or is it a...
Because I can't remember. Things pass through on my radio show, you know. There's so much I can't remember. I just remember to direct someone. But Roland McCrady is his name. And on my archive page, it'll be Roland McCrady HeartMath Research Institute. I really don't know how they do it. I can't remember. I think you put your fingers in these little things, and it's connected to some kind of small computer, so you can teach yourself how to get in that altered state of mind.
Oh, so it's sort of a form of biofeedback.
I think so, but you need to look at it, because they again, they're way out on the edge in research.
Well, there's it. Yeah.
One more person that I thought about is a guy named Vernon Nepe, N-E-P-P-E. And I'm glad I'm getting to say all these names so everybody can write them down. He's a neuropsychiatrist and a pharmacologist, if I'm correct in my memory. I did an interview with him, but he's also interested in human consciousness. So he understands things that other people don't understand about consciousness and mind. And he might be a real good person for you to email back. He might give you some good suggestions. I forget where he is, Pacific Institute or something.
Oh, he's on the West Coast then, huh?
Yeah, he's on the West Coast somewhere. Maybe up near Canada even. I can't remember, but Google his name and you'll find it.
Google him, yeah. There is an interesting technique. Some Russian scientists. It's called brain music, I think. Brain music is what they call it. And they do your EEG. They take you into the lab and find out, you know, get your EEG, and then they work it into some other kind of sounds that they claim they have a mathematical kind of a logarithm or something for this, and then they give you this tape, which is your own kind of brain music that's mixed in with something else. And I don't know, they claim a certain amount of success with that. And actually, there are practitioners growing up. I noticed there were a few people in California who were doing that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it does. Really sounds interesting. Because I do believe sounds can do things to your brain. I mean, when you get... somebody gave me a wonderful Tibetan music once, and it was just sort of bongs and kind of vibratory, and it really was very soothing.
I had the Tibetan monks for dinner this week. They're here in Atlanta, and I had them for dinner, and they did that song, and they did that noise. I don't know how to do it, but you know what I'm talking about, that what you just said. Mm-hmm. And they also do... a frequency bowl where they run this stick around the outside of a brass bowl. And they also have crystal bowls, not the monks, but crystal bowls are available, and they're tuned to each chakra, like F or B flat or C. And it affects different parts of your body. And sometimes I've had an experience where I feel like when I do this, like I'm floating. Something happens with those frequencies. Everything's frequency based. Something happens, so you might.
Yeah, they are powerful, and what you need to do is to get the mind away from that chattering monkey, you know, as the Buddhists call it. You know, we've all got this chattering monkey going on inside ourselves, and it just may be noisier in insomniacs than in other people, but I think it is in everybody. You know, but to somehow get the brain off of that frequency into something that's, you know, calm. It's anything that you can find to do that is great. Yeah.
Well, you've got about 7 minutes. Is there anything in particular that you would like to make sure that you cover?
Well, I mean, I do want to sort of make a pitch for destigmatizing this problem. We are so often given the rap that, you know, it's something you're doing wrong. It's your bad habits, your bad attitude. You're crazy, you know, which is what the guy I was with was really giving me that message. You're depressed, you're stressed, you're anxious. You somehow don't have hold of your life, you know. And so there's a stigma attached to it, which makes us not talk about it. And so it's a really invisible and silenced. Our voices are silenced. And, you know, we don't really have an idea of how many, many, many people there are who are suffering with this because we haven't come out of the closet. We haven't expressed ourselves. So I really was writing the book to try to empower insomniacs. And I mean, look, you know, we are the only, disability, I would call it a kind of a disability, that doesn't have a patient-organized advocacy group. We've never organized on our own behalf. And I think we've been so talked out of the condition, so, you know, stigmatized that we don't want to admit we have it. I interviewed many insomniacs who would say, well, I'm not insomniac, but I just have trouble sleeping. And then they would describe a sleep pattern just like mine.
Right.
And I'd say, oh, okay, you're not an insomniac. You don't want to call yourself an insomniac because that's tantamount to admitting, you know, I'm a mess. I'm a psychological mess. Well, you're not, you know. I mean, the chances are you are not. The chances are that, you know, this is simply a biological, neurobiological imbalance that someday will be understood and there will be therapies available to us, and then we'll look back on this stigmatization of it as though it was the Dark Ages. Yeah.
Well, I think it's great that you have that support group on your blog.
Yeah, I'm
How
trying...
do people get there again?
Sleepstarve.org. Sleepstarve.org.
Well, I think it's a great thing, because when I saw your book, it was the only one out there, pretty much.
Yeah, it is.
That covered as much detail.
It's amazing nobody wrote about this, and I think that's because we've all been shamed out of it. You know, nobody wants to admit it. You
We're
know.
Too tired.
Yeah, they're that also.
I feel sorry for you, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's you know, but it's not the worst affliction. When you think about some of the other things people are born with, it's not, you know, I don't know. It's something that one can kind of get hold of. Although, you know, it is pretty psychologically debilitating, I guess is the word.
I did want to tell you this one more thing. There's a guy, somebody, a dentist I had on my show not too long ago, that wrote a book about how to detox from mercury and other heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good book. It's about an inch thick, and his name's Dr. Tom McGuire.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, that's one of the things in there that he talks about, that if you're loaded down with heavy metals, you know, I don't know where you came from, if there was something around you that got in your water possibly, or your food, or, but it might be something for you to think about.
Yeah, yeah, I have read a little bit about that. And
he
I
did
some...
a really good book. It's a new
mm-hmm.
book.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask me, if you email me, I can tell you how to find, get a hold of a copy of it.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Well, all right. It was a pleasure to have you. I thank you.
Very nice to talk to you.
And if there's anything that I can do to help you or any of the people on your blog, connect up with any of these people that might can help them.
Well, you actually had a number of interesting suggestions. I mean, if you could just post that, you know, I guess it would be in the alternative therapy part, or it would be in the how
you... Know, let me see how much time we have, because we'll get cut off. We got 2-3 minutes that we
uh-huh.
can get. A lot of the things, it's not written down anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's just people coming in.
I only know about it because I'm fortunate enough to get into long, detailed conversations with people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and they'll go, well, you know, now that you mention it, I know this. So one, I don't think one single thing may help,
mm-hmm,
but I think
mm-hmm.
if you combined neurotransmitters, hormones, minerals,
mm-hmm.
amino acids,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think, or detoxing, I
mm-hmm.
think there's a possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just sitting down and taking the time to write those people's names down and to do a little bit of research on these things, and if I can tell you. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think the potential's there.
Well, if you can leave some of that, I mean, not only write me, but actually put it in the, or, you know, just put it in the Sleep Star, that'd be fine, because I'd find it there.
I'll try. If I don't get there, because I go to bed now, it's 11 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, now.
But please email me and say, send me that.
Yeah.
And I'll also give you a link to this show.
Okay.
You can put on your site and
mm-hmm.
say,
mm-hmm.
Just remind me to do it, and I'll do it.
Okay, great.
But thanks. It's been a pleasure having you, because there's certainly people that need you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care and good night.
Yeah, take care of you. Bye.